This message by Bruce Downs, brought to you by the Catholic Eye Impact Communities, will inspire you to dream. We pray that it blesses you today.
Well, we want to move on and continue on. We're talking about building the culture of our house. Our house is this community that we are going to going to live in. Now, every week, the messages, and if you go to the website, we have reduced down and reduced down and reduced down the number of people who are getting our emails. And that's intentional. So each week, all of the talks that have been given pretty much from the beginning are on the internet now, and you can listen to any week you want to. Now, because what I'm going to do is we're going to build a case of what is this that's distinct from everyone else and everything else. Not that it's better, it's just distinct. You need just some blank paper. Sandra's given you paper at the door. We're just going to build the house. So every week, if you miss a week, I really need you, if you can, just to listen to it. Now, it's in the car. I often listen to talks during in the car all the time, or at home or something like that. You can listen to it. You don't have to watch it, but just listen to it. And then, as we said last week, once we've declared it at the dinners, that's the way we're going to be from that on, that way from then on in the future. I loved your sharing, Melissa. The truth is, last week we talked about greeting with intention. And when you experience it, it is interesting. It's just, it confronts you, doesn't it? And you think to yourself, wouldn't it be great to be in a community like that? Well, our purpose, our mission, I don't know if I've said this to you before. Have I shared with you what we're about? On the screen, it says this, we exist. Have I said this before? We exist to bring disconnected people to an ever-deepening relationship with Jesus. Right? Love to attend. Because they love to come. And our purpose statement is what we do. It's our head. It's the thought. It's the direction. Our systems are how we do it. It's our hands. It's how we're going to get it done. And culture is how we think and behave. It's the heart of the place. It's the heart of the place. Now, this evening, I set out with a goal to make sure we're all happy. And any of you, when you get the chance to lead, and you will lead, because if we're going to do this multiple times, we're going to need multiple leaders. The person who stands out the front sets the atmosphere. Right? Whether you're a singer, whether you're anything on the stuff on the stage, the person who says, we want to be a place of joy, do we not? Yes. When you come into John 10:10, my life scripture says, I came that may have life and have it to the full. That's surely got to be happy. Right? So we want to be a people of joy. Culture is about heart. It's about feel of the place. Culture is about the way we think. What's our atmosphere? If someone came here this evening, I think people would go, these people are on something. They're not quite fully on it, but in a few weeks' time, they'll be fully on it, right? What causes you to laugh? What causes us to laugh, to cry? What breaks our heart? What do we like to be around? What really matters to us? How do we act? What are our habits? In other words, what's distinctive about us? That's culture, and you experience it in many different ways. So last week, we talked about greeting with intention, about being intentional. And if you haven't heard that, you can go listen to that message. And I said to you last week, I said, my desire is that you would be the most welcoming people on planet Earth, that people would be confounded by love when they came into what we're about to do in time, is that they'd be confounded by love. Well, today's culture building talk, the title of it is Knowing What the Unchurched Think. Knowing What the Unchurched Think. If you don't know what they think, you can't reach them. So what do they think? What do they think? What are they feeling? What are the people who don't go to church? What is in their mind? And we're surrounded by them, aren't we? And so my desire for this talk on the screen, my desire is that you would realize that every encounter at church with people makes an... my desire is that you would realize that every encounter at church with people makes an impression that will either drive them away or give faith a chance to be heard and considered. Let me read that again. My desire is that you would realize that every encounter at church with people makes an impression that will either drive them away or give faith a chance to be heard and considered. While we may not have them at hello, they will wonder what's different about our hello and be open to listening. We have to win the unchurched. We have to win them, and how we relate to them, how they experience us, is utterly important if we're going to be faithful to this goal. And one of the problems with groups like ourselves who set out with this vision of reaching disconnected people, and it's not an uncommon vision, is it doesn't take long before it's reach us. And it's just reached Catholics that, or Christians who are in churches or parishes and just want a little bit more affection, a little bit more excitement, etc. And they slide off to reaching good people. And we're not saying anyone, we're saying anyone can come. But we want to make sure we really genuinely are about our target market. Now, if you have a Bible, turn with me to 1 Samuel 16, verse 1. Now, as you know, I'm not going to give you the Bible and I'm not going to read them on the scriptures any on the screens anymore. I just want you to either look on your computer or I'll read it to you. Bring a Bible each week, either electronic or otherwise. 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 1. I'll wait for you a second. And now they can just edit out the break whilst you're looking. 1 Samuel. Now, if you have got a Bible, you're not sure, just look in your index. Now, the background of this story is that God had never wanted to give the people of Israel, 1 Samuel chapter 16, God had never wanted to give the people of Israel a king. But when they looked around at all the other nations around them, all the other nations had kings. And they used to call out to God all the time, "We want a king, we want a king." And in the end, God reneged and he gave them what they wanted, but he said to them, "This will not in the end go well for you." And the very first king was this guy named King Saul. And it says that King Saul stood head and shoulders above everyone else, was a good-looking fella. But in time, his heart became corrupt. And the anointing of God was lifted from him. So one day, God comes along to the prophet Samuel and gives him the task of anointing the next king. But here's the thing. Samuel is still the king, right? And so Samuel's a little worried that he's going to get himself killed if he goes and anoints another king. So we pick it up in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 1. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve over Saul, the king who's gone corrupt? I've rejected him from being king over Israel. Fill your horn with oil and set out. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I've provided for myself a king among his sons." Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears of it, he'll kill me." And the Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I've come to sacrifice to the Lord.' Invite Jesse to the sacrifice and I will show you what you shall do, and you shall anoint for me the one whom I name to you." So go to this dinner, I'm going to anoint someone else and I'm going to show you, right? Now, here's an interesting verse 3. As we read over and over in the scriptures, God seems to always give direction, doesn't he? But he doesn't give the final result. He always wants you to walk. What he wants you to do is, what I want you to do is sell your house in Perth. I want you to go to Sydney. I want you to start living, then I'll show you, and then I'll provide for you. And we read it in the scriptures all the time. This week, on this last Thursday was the 7th of November. 42 years ago, on the 7th of November, at quarter to nine at night, in the Infant Jesus Kindergarten, I committed my life to Christ, and a priest by the name of Father Des prayed for me. And he's very elderly now, and he was in his 40s, but he's really quite elderly now and frail. And I rang him, and I said to him when he picked up the phone, "I blame you for all of this. Because if you hadn't pursued me when I was just a teenager, you know, look at what happened because you chased me." And so I was just telling him some of the stories of what's happened, and particularly in these last few weeks, and the miracle stories of what God has been doing in these last few weeks. And he said to me, he said, "Listening to the story that you're telling of what's happening among this group of people," he said, "it's like reading the scriptures, isn't it? Of God calling, you walking, and then after the event, him then giving you the detail on the way." See, he tells us direction, then wants us to walk in a shaky way, and then gives us assurance that he's with us in time. And we see that. So verse 2, Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears of it, he'll kill me." And the Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I've come to sacrifice the Lord.'" Verse 3, "Invite Jesse to the sacrifice and I will show you what you shall do. And you shall anoint for me the one whom I name to you." Samuel did what the Lord commanded and came to Bethlehem. The elders of the Lord came to meet him trembling and said, "Do you come peaceably?" And he said, "Peaceably, I've come to sacrifice to the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." And he sanctified Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. And when they came, he looked on Eliab, who was the oldest, and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is now before me." Verse 7, key verse. But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I've rejected him. For the Lord does not see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. And if you read the rest of the story, he runs out of sons. And Samuel says to him, have you got another son? And he says, well, I've got one out the back. He says, well, I'm not going on until you bring that one. Verse 11, Samuel said to Jesse, are all your sons here? And he said, there remains yet the youngest, but he's keeping the sheep. And Samuel said to Jesse, send and bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes here. He sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. And the Lord said, rise and anoint him, for this is the one. I was once described as ruddy and with beautiful eyes and handsome. No, it's never happened. So someone gets anointed who was not chosen, right? But that verse 7 is, absolutely, go back to verse 7. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look on the appearance or the height of his stature, because I've rejected him, for the Lord does not see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. This verse gives us an amazing insight into reaching the unchurched and can be applied very well into our day. And so as we start, it's important for us to understand our clientele, because in a little while, we're going to set up shop, we're going to say to the nation, come on, we're on, because we can share with you a message that we believe in. It's going to be relevant and powerful and meaningful and transformative for your life. And so we're going to, who are our clientele? There's two groups. There's the unchurched on the screen, and these are the have never beens. And then there's the de-church, once went, no longer do. Anybody know any never beens? Anybody here in their family got once went, no longer do? Many of us do, don't we? They're the ones we're trying to reach. We're not trying to reach the ones who already go. Now, in the Catholic world, in our country, 88% of people are described there on the screen, right? The unchurched, never been. The de-church, once went, no longer do. That's 88%. We're not after the other 12%. We're not after them. So we're going to create these TCGIC centres, communities, and invite people to attend. And in that place of attendance, in that place where we are, we're going to go out, but we're going to hope that they, and we're going to present Christ and pray and hope that they come to Christ. Now, why aren't people coming to church? You've got to understand this. If we don't understand this, we're not going to be able to have meaningful conversation. And if you read the Community and Church IC document, the vision document, or what this looks like at the end, that page dominates everything, even though it's too big to give to someone because it's just so complex. It says, our goal is to create ways to share with the church methods of outreach. So we want to go to other communities, other groups, and we want to say, listen, we've discovered these methods. Here it is. It's free. Take it. Go, you know, do with it what you will. Right? So why are people not coming to church? I can remember when ice creams, I'm so old, were 5 cents. Any of you ever heard of Mr. Whippy? Yes. I remember when Mr. Whippy was five cents. I remember when computers were only in sci-fi movies. I'm that old. Computing to me in year 10 was this. You got these cards, you punched out the holes, they took them away down to the university, and 7 days later they came back and told you which ones you punched out wrong. That was computing. Right, that was computing. I remember being very little, and in this little car we had a Vauxhall car, and on the side, when you press the indicator, a little hand would come out and blink, and then the hand would come down. Some of you remember that? Yeah, you really are old. Okay, some of you young people are going, seriously? Right. I remember when boys and dads wore ties to mass every Sunday. I remember when women wore hats to church every Sunday. I remember my mum having a hat box in her room. And I can remember when the local church was a large part of a person's Catholic social world, where church dances and church sports teams were part of weekend activities. I remember that really strongly. I certainly heard of stories of countless older people who met their husbands and wives at dances and social activities. And while it wasn't the only way that people met in the world, it was certainly a big part of a Catholic's life. Today, in the Western church, Catholic Church, these forms of connection are virtually non-existent in any significant number. Now, I know there was someone to come and say, in my parish, we had a dance and, you know, 100 people came. But what's that prepared to the proportion of the people in the suburb or in the area? So we can always find the person and say, but in my place. I remember doing youth ministry many years ago, and I was talking to about 300 parents one night on the faith of young people. And I was saying, listen, you know, this is the trends that we're seeing. And this man up the back, he said, oh, no, in my parish, we've got a youth group and 50 kids come. And he did, and that was fantastic. But the truth is, we figured out that between 15 and 23, there were 90,000 kids in the city. And when we added up every kid in the whole city of Perth who went to a youth group, it came to 900 in every Catholic parish in the city. And he didn't want to hear that we were struggling. He wanted to hear my parish is doing good, and it was. It was fantastic. So you'll always hear people say, it wasn't like that for me. For many people now, for many people under 40, they have never known the church on a social level. They've never known the church. The church is where you go on the weekend, even if you don't understand it, particularly for those who get it, go to the church. For many people, the church is just an option where you might get married now. It's a place where funerals are held. It's a place where children are baptized, and the sacraments of communion, confirmation, the sacraments of initiation occur. When the Catholic school says to you, it's time, and you go, and you don't know what they're doing really, but you go, to suggest to people under 40 that the church is a place of social connectedness is nonsense for people today. And yet many churches, in the way they're set up, even though they know it at a cognitive level, are still set up at the level of let's be social, and people have their social connection here. At a heart level, everybody knows at a cognitive level that's just not the case anymore. It's not the case. So what changed in 50 years? Now, I know some of you are not 50. Well, technology exploded. Transport became far more common. We moved from a world of few options to almost unlimited options. Have a look in the house designs. When my mum and dad built their house 50 years ago, there were four plans. And you got to pick one of the four. Now, there's countless plans. Education. Look at toys. I had a matchbox car when I was young. And at Christmas, we got one family present for all of us. Now, I know that was just our family, but it was not what it is now. There weren't quite the big shops, giant shops that are just toy shops that there were when I was young. Permanent is no longer necessarily cool or desirable. Change in keeping your options seems to be the value that we hold today. Masses of people around the world have access to news and information in ways that have exposed them to many other forms of thinking and many other values. And so slowly and quite rapidly, we've moved to a worldview which dominates social values in the Western world. And the unchurched think like this, and it's this on the screen. Do whatever you want as long as you're not hurting others, and don't let anyone tell you what to do with your life. These are dominant values. Now the church comes along, authority figures come along, even in the secular world, and they have counter opinions to this because they're a lot more definite. And it's in this massive mix of technological information and material change, the church has remained buffeted. It's not defeated, bearing the truth, but seemingly just not relevant among the clientele who once saw it as part of their world. Pope Benedict XVI in 2008 at Vespers in Washington, in Rome, when he was visiting Rome, He spoke of the fact that we are being challenged by the rise of secularism, the total lack of religion in the world, and belief that it is, and he said, and it's rapidly enveloping the whole of our society and our Western culture, leading to generations of people who don't even know the foundations of faith. And that would be true. He also talked about, and I've mentioned it in recent weeks, he also talked about the rise of materialism, consumerism, and the individualism has been great barriers to faith. And so he said was, what we see is we see people living in this godless world, we see people living in this world of let's have more, and we see people living in this world of whatever I want to do is okay. And they are dominant values in our society. And if we're going to evangelize, if we're going to reach people who don't go to church, that's exactly what we're dealing with. And unless we have ways of talking about that, sharing about that, showing a counter alternative to that. We're not going to make any headway in it whatsoever. The other thing, when people come to what we're going to offer them, they are going to come with a what's in it for me mentality. What's in it for me? That dominates the world's thinking right now. It dominates the world's thinking. What's in it for me? So if we're going to be this evangelizing community, if we're going to love people who don't go, this what's in it for me dominates the world. And it's the mindset of materialism, or the mindset of secularism and consumerism and individualism. You even see people treat the church like this. And I have a lot to do with priests, and my heart goes out to them sometimes on this. We see it very much around parents who want to have their children sacramentalized with baptism or confirmation, or they're getting married. But we see it with parents come and they want their children done. And you hear them even say that, use that phrase, I want them done. And even though they don't practice the faith, even though they don't even necessarily believe, to them it's social, it's like a rite of passage. The family party, the dress, the photos can swamp the meaning of the sacraments. And to priests, that this is, for many of them, I've talked to them, it's heartbreaking, it's insulting to them, and it's caused many of them to really struggle with the whole issue of how do I continue on, because I fundamentally believe in what this is, and yet it's being rubbished by the fact that I've got to do it, or I've got to deal with it in some way. And we see that whole idea of secularism, godlessness around the sacraments from the parents' perspective. We see that whole aspect of materialism, the party, the clothes, and everything else around the sacrament. And we see that whole self of individualism, that it's about me and my family, where the sacraments are about entering into this universal community of church and faith. We see it clearly all around us. Most people come to church, come with very little understanding of the universal understanding of the church, what the mission of the church is, or what the mission of the local church is. Many people look at the church who aren't attending with three kind of mentalities. The first of these mentalities is a service mentality. I have needs, you're here to meet those needs. Father, I've got needs, you're here to meet those needs. Secondly, they come with an entertainment mentality. And the entertainment mentality says this, and it's not on the screen. An entertainment, please me by how you do it. If it's not good, I'm not coming back, right? So there's this service mentality. I have needs. You're here to meet those needs. An entertainment mentality that says, please me by how you do it. And the third mentality of the unchurched is this, a relevant mentality. How can I use it in my life? And so what we see is in many Catholic people who don't come to church is they're not coming because they don't see any point to it. They don't understand it. So when we have sermons about prayer and about suffering and about struggle and about around the character and the person of God, about the church and its place, people go, I can't use that. They have this relevant mentality. In other words, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? If we're going to attract people to our buildings, to our activities in our homes and in places in business, we have to understand what the unchurched are thinking. People are not looking to the church for their social needs or even their heart needs or their life needs to be met in any significant number anymore. Now, some people will say, but I know people who are. Of course there are some, but it is the vast minority that are. So just let's pause for a second. Some people who are committed don't like this talk, don't like talking this way, because I've had people say to me, but the church, it's about God, it's not about yourself. Just go. I had someone say to me, I was at a parish mission once, and someone said to me, you know, why do you do it like that? Why don't you just tell them what it is? Someone once wrote to me a letter and said, why do you make people laugh? Just tell your stuff, get off. And Peter, you're not here. Church is not meant to be enjoyable. And you hear some people say it's not about meeting people. It's just about going. It's about maturity and believing. And if you're a mature Christian and a really mature Christian, the way it's presented in the environment and all of that type of stuff, well, the truth is, isn't important. But I would argue that for the most people, even the committed, the things of environment and welcome and communication matter. Why do you take effort at home? Why do you have Christmas dinners? Why do you have birthday parties? Why is your house like your house is? Because those sorts of things matter, don't they? Why is your bedroom the way it is? Because those things matter. So to someone who says, these things don't matter because I'm a mature Christian and you just got to tell it, my response is, that's good for you. It's just not good for the majority. And so you're not wrong, but the truth is, it's good for you because they're going to ask the question, what's in it for me? Think about people who are critical of the church. Right? You've all got a dozen names each. Yeah? Because that's the world. They're not looking at us as really, well, why aren't they here? When's the last time you invited someone to Mass and they go, oh, gee, I'd like to go to that? I'm not trying to be critical. I'm saying, but this is what we've got to wrestle with. Because we've said, can I just say this to you? I've said this to the church. I've shot my mouth off. Jude believed it. He's gone to the bishop and said, you need to meet these guys. I've met them. I've shot my mouth off again. And I said, I've got this group of people. They are so holy. They are so together and they so understand this. They can do this. And I'm following them, right? And they've believed it, right? The truth is, the majority of people are not looking to the church to meet their needs. Is that not true? And that's not being negative, it's just true. The point is 12% attend and most of them are elderly. In the Campbelltown, Camden region, according to statistics, if the statistics are true, there are 72 young men between the age of 20 and 24 who go to Mass on Sunday. That's all. And most of them are from migrant families. That's all. So we're not exaggerating. It is what it is. But I'm not without hope for the church at all. So this what's in it for me attitude, whenever you look at someone, you invite them to church, you got to look with that thought in the back of your mind because they're thinking, what's in it for me? Because the whole of our world is thinking that way, is it not? As long as you're not hurting anybody, don't let anybody tell you what to do. That is a fundamental value within our world, and the popes of recent have been talking about that value. See, this is the world we're going to work in. This is the office space that we've said we're going to work in. This is the field we're going to go out to play on. This is where we're going to go to war. This is where we have chosen to set up camp, and we have said to the church, we know how to do this. That's exactly what we said. Am I exaggerating, Jude? That's exactly what we said. We know how to do this. So Heidi's going to lead us. And what's our purpose? Look at our purpose statement again. I don't know if I've ever shared this with you. We exist to bring disconnected people to an ever-deepening relationship. Not just a relationship. We're not Protestants. We're not Protestants. We're not evangelicals. We're Catholic evangelicals, maybe. But an ever-deepening relationship with Jesus, it doesn't stop. Through the building of communities that people love to attend or the building of church communities that people love to attend. We want these unchurched people to come to these Catholic Guy Impact Centres and say, I experienced Jesus here and I'm going to experience Jesus in the people and in the way it's presented. Now, the obvious question everybody keeps asking me is, if this is what people are thinking, what's in it for me, how are you going to get people to come? And what are you going to do? Well, we're going to do this at a series of levels, right? And this is part of, you can say, how is this part of the culture? Because the levels have to be part of the culture. in how we build it. There's a ground level, the ground level. And the ground level is when someone looks at us is this, is the impression of who we are and what we're doing. When someone doesn't go to church, the first thing they look at is what the impression of us. And we have to change people's impression of the church. And the place to start is the very first impression. The very first impression people have if they're going to give us the chance to present the church to them in Christ. And the reason I say church is I talk in a Catholic language. Or sometimes, why don't we say, listen, often you say, when I first started this, I felt like the Lord said to me, I want you to reach those disconnected from the church. Our Protestant brothers and sisters would say, reach those disconnected from Jesus. But Jesus established the church to be the vehicle through which he would be proclaimed. So the fundamental, when you say we're bringing someone to church as a Catholic, you are automatically bringing them to Christ, but the fullness of the expression of that, it's not because it isn't Jesus and me, because we are part of a body and not just an individual. And Jesus is our head. We're part of a body. So we have to change people's impression from the very first time we see them. And I'm going to give a talk in a little while about the first impression changes lives. The very first impression changes lives. Is this place of welcome, the impression we're going to give, is it a place of genuine welcome? Do we greet with intention or are we just trained greeters? Can a person who comes along to us and come into our meetings, can they investigate the message of Christ, the church, without feeling pressured to join? Can they all be pointed out? Can they stay hidden in the crowd? Can they come along as often as they need to and not have to do anything? And everybody else does it. I remember when I go to Catholic Guy missions, at the end of the night, I often have on the very first night, very common this is, men who will come to me, men my age and older, who will come to me and they say to you very awkwardly, and I don't know who they are, they don't have to say it to me. They say, I want to talk to you. And as soon as they say it, I know what they're going to say. Because it's been said to me so many times. And then they'll say, sheepishly though, I want to apologise. My impression of this before I came was this was going to be tele-evangelist, this was going to be rah-rah, this was going to be happy-clappy, this was going to be jump for Jesus, this was going to be all about money. And tonight was about my life. Tonight was about my wife. I apologise, I didn't know. The first impression is imperative. It's imperative because the impression will keep many people away. You know the number one reason people don't come to our missions when we travel? The most common reason is I don't want to go and be shouted at because I used to go to these missions when I was younger and they were fire and brimstone and I was told I was going to hell and I was a bad person. And I'm 70 years old now and there's enough individualism that's risen in me over the years. I don't want to be told off, so I'm not coming. Right. So is this a place of genuine welcome? The impression so important. Can I investigate Christ, the church? Can I do it anonymously when no one points me out? I heard of a church that stood up one day and said, "Listen, everybody, we want to know who's brand new. If you're visiting here for the first time, why don't you all stand? We want to give you a warm fuzzy." And what they did was they had a little box of little fluff and they put a fluff on your shoulder. And they said to everybody, at coffee, go and give these people a hug. They didn't grow too well, that church. Right? But people want to come and be anonymous in the crowd. The other thing that the unchurched will ask is it well run? Because we're notorious for things being poorly run, aren't we? Is it well run? I had one man say to me, he says, I don't go to church, it's like walking in the Middle Ages. Right. You have a look at the world. We live in cities with computers and high quality and sometimes you can't see that. Now, I'm not saying I agree or disagree. I'm not actually saying if I disagree or agree with what people's impression is. Because to be honest with you, those things don't matter to me. Not anymore. I'm happy to go to a place that's broken down and sit with a group of people and who love the Lord. That's far more important to me. But man looks at the outside, God looks at the heart. And if we don't win the battle at the visual, at the effect, we won't win the battle. And so some Catholics become very defensive because they go, you're negative, you're negative, you're negative. I'm not negative at all. I'm trying to reach people who are negative. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right. The fourth thing, is it worthwhile and useful to me? That always comes back. Is it worthwhile to my family? Is it worthwhile to my children? Mums will ask their children upon picking up their kids this question from children's ministry. Did you have fun? And that's the thing they've got to remember. And you can't teach your child in children's ministry the story of Jonah. Because when the parent child comes out, you can't just leave them there by yourself. Because when the child comes out and says to their 35-year-old Catholic mum or dad, so what did you do? And the parents say, what did you do? And we say, we did the story of Jonah. More than likely, the parent doesn't know the story. You have to give them a sentence or two to be able to say, this is what it was, mum and dad. Right? Because they don't know. And then number five, and this is a hard one, is how will I be perceived if I attend by people in my family or people in my world? How will I be perceived? I was in Canberra, and we were doing a mission, and for some reason the education department there heard that we were in town, and for their development, for their professional development, decided that quite a number of the Catholic schools had to send their teachers. And so each night we had 60, 70, 80 Catholic school teachers there. And so they'd come from different schools and they came in waves. They didn't come for the whole event, but they came for a night. And on the night they sat at the back and many of them appeared very distracted. And then they left and they, et cetera. And then in the next few nights, because their group had gone, many of them just came back individually. But they didn't want to be in an environment with their peers that might say, look at what you got something out of that. And then they come the next night and they said to me, I thought I'd be the only teacher who came back, and there's actually other teachers who came back and they must have got something from it too. Perception is very powerful, isn't it? Yeah? It's very powerful. The level one is this. So if level one is the impression on it, the level one is what is seen. Does this appear to be a place worth attending by what I see? In other words, the environment is important. The physical environment is important. And the Catholic Church knows this very, very well. Have a look at churches that have been built. Have a look at cathedrals that have been built. They speak of the glory. They're a statement about the glory of God. But what is seen? And we're going to win this battle on the internet more than anywhere else, because everybody goes to the internet to check everything this week. So our internet stuff has to be just unbelievable. So what's seen? Level two of where we are is, so if the ground is impression on us, level, it's what's seen. So that's the reason why we're going to put a huge amount of the money we have into the building we have. And we're not just going to get, so that it will be done at very high quality, the best quality we can. And then level two is what's felt. Its atmosphere dictates emotion. And if you talk to any salesman and if you study it, people buy on emotion and then they stay on reason, if that makes sense, right? Evangelization speaks to the heart. It has to be intelligent. And it's here that surrender takes place. Right, it's here, and that surrender leads very much to the next level, level three, which is what is known, and that's the surety about faith, because whilst the truth is, often I don't feel too crash hot about my faith, I'm just, you know, I don't know what happens, but I know that I know that I know, and so there's a maturity to it. So to get people to come, we have to help them to feel comfortable and become comfortable. Now, people are creatures of habit, aren't they? We actually have more habits than we think. We often go to the same bank, the same post office, the same shopping center, the same restaurants. Why? For a number of reasons. And keep thinking, how are we going to get the unchurched to come? Right? We go to those places because it's pleasant. We go to places because of the quality. For example, for 15 years of my life, I've got to find a new one now, and I need one now. I use the same mechanic all the time because he was good. And because he's the third, because of the price. The price was good. You go and use the same places all the time because you develop relationship with people that are there. There's ease to get there. It's ease of entry. There's distance from home or distance from work. The quality of what you get and as to whether it's safe. So you'll notice everything we choose is we choose around that question of what's in it for me. It's a dominant question. The quality, speed, convenience, safety, these all reflect the priorities in our lives and in people's lives. Some years ago, Rosemary and I went to a Chinese restaurant, and we were there, and at the end of eating this Chinese food, the lady who was the manager of the Chinese restaurant, she walked up to us, and she said, "You order no good." I remember she had broken English. She said, "You order no good. You order Aussie Chinese." I didn't know I was in Australia, so I was ordering Chinese. And I said to her, "So what should we have done?" She said, "Order nothing on the menu." And we're in this really good restaurant. And I said, "So how would we order?" She said, "You let me order for you." Well, sounded interesting. Well, some weeks later, we went back. She recognized us. And I remember on the day when we went back, she said to me, "You order white person Chinese." She said, "I will order Asian Chinese." Well, the food was unbelievable. I didn't even know Chinese food could taste like that. So much so, I've never gone back to a normal suburban Chinese restaurant. It just so destroyed me. It was the best Chinese. When Rosie and I, we go to a restaurant, it's about the experience, isn't it? It's about the quality of the experience. The owner of the restaurant, if they think about it, knows it. And so someone coming to us, they're not going to come because it's church. Just throw that idea out. They're not going to come because it's church. They're going to, you know, the convinced will, "I'll go because it's church. My brothers aren't going to go because it's church. My brothers will come because of the experience. Or my brothers will come because they're going through a transition point. Something's happened, something's difficult, something's troubling them in their life. And so church becomes that backstop place. As they say, if you want to fill the church, let's just start a war. Everybody will come." And so the value of the experience matters to the customer. So if people are going to come to us, the value of the experience will matter. Because remember, it said in 1 Samuel 16:7, "But the Lord said to Samuel, don't look at the outside, don't look at his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I've rejected him, for the Lord doesn't see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." It's the same in the church. The experience will dictate what we're going to do. So we have to view the person coming to our services as consumers. Now we can say, that's the wrong way to talk about church, but that's exactly what they are. Look at all of these growing churches around the world. They are consumers. And we have to give them a reason to choose us as opposed to the things that are in their world. And why does it say in our purpose statement? I've never said this, I've never read you our purpose statement, but it says, so that they love to attend. See, everybody's life is full. We've got to give them an experience that is so good that they will put us in the place of something that they're already doing, and they'll go, "I was happy to throw off that thing I was already doing that was good, but this is a better." And if we're not better, they're not going to come. They're not going to come. We've got to compete with children's sport. We've got to compete with television. We've got to compete with chores around the house on Sundays. We've got to compete with apathy. We've got to compete with pressures from others to not attend. We've got to compete with reading the newspaper and staying home and having a cup of tea and toast in the morning. We have to compete with laziness, right? Good music will not get them to come. Don't kid yourself. Music will not get you. Good preaching will not get you to come. Will get them to come. You can't do it without good preaching. You can do it without good music. You can't do it without good preaching, but good preaching won't get them to come. And a nice place won't do it. What will do it is this, is their impression of us, what they see, what they feel, and then what they come to know. I believe because of what I saw, I've surrendered my life to Christ. Over time, I've seen the power of God work miraculously over and over and over again. I know it now. And so you can now take away the feeling, and I'm going to stand here, if that makes sense, because it's based on what I see. So we have to create, so what's our strategy? We have to create experiences that bring people back. So when we start, we've got to create experiences that bring them back. Why do we have to bring experiences, do that? For this reason, is that you respond with your head and heart over time. Very rarely does one proclamation of the gospel in the modern world get you. Back in the day of Billy Graham, it might have. We're not living in that era now. You need a repeated convincing discipleship, the transformation of people's lives. I was talking to a pastor friend of mine, and he said 20 years ago, you used to go and stand up on Sunday at church and say, you know, it's sin to live together when you're not married. And he said what would happen is people would hear that in church, they would go home, and one would move out. He said today you stand up and say it's sin to live together. They come and say, yes, I give my life to Jesus, and they come up the front and they fall down the floor, and then they just go home. Because society is no longer Christian. And so people don't even have it in their psyche. So discipleship takes time. Culture. The reason we've spent 24 weeks at this and we've whittled the group down and whittled the group down and whittled the group down is because we're about culture building. Because it lives in the culture, in the talk, in the feel. And so when people don't come, you notice we didn't chase them. So we've whittled it down and whittled it down, whittled it down. And the other thing is friendship takes time. Friendship takes time. Now, having said all of that about what we're going to do to them, this next 5 minutes is what the whole night is about. What about us? So that's all well and good. That's all strategy. We can do that. And with the grace of God, we can do all that, right? This is the world we're working in. We're working in a world that isn't looking to the church to meet their needs, like my parents did. When my dad was struggling, when one of my brothers was divorced, I've told you this story before, I came home and he was at the kitchen table and he was almost crying, and he had that big white Bible that every family had back in those days, or a lot of families had the big Bible, and he had it opened on the table, and I remember watching him, and it was one, I'll never forget this, he flicking through the pages and him saying, I know there's good stuff in here, but I can't find anything. He didn't know it. That's the world we're living. We're living in this world where we have meaning and answers. We have Christ. We are the church as part of this universal church. And as we heard in the press statement that Jude read, the Holy Father is calling us to proclaim the gospel in fresh and bold ways. This is the game where we play. So what has to happen to us? We have to experience conversion. Not just conversion to Jesus, yeah, that's true. But we have to experience this conversion of this matters. This matters. This is worth sacrificing for. This is worth changing our lives for. But more than that, it matters for this reason, because people matter. People matter. We've got to do this because people are valuable to God. Not because we want a big group, not because we want to have a this or a that, not because we want to be known, or not because it'll make us feel good, but because people matter. And we have a God who is desperately in love with people. And unfortunately, his strategy, which I wouldn't choose, is people. And we've got to take, you know, some of you have got, you know, various levels of theological training. Many of you have been in church for a long time. Some of you are blessed with not getting much out of it at all, and you're just getting interested in it, and you're going to be the ones who'll be able to relate to people better than we will, and you won't even know you know. Because you get a churchified person like me who's been around church for so long, the truth is, sometimes I'm not the best evangelist in the world. I'm just not. I can tell you what it says. But I'm so churchified, I can't relate as well as some of you who've been in the world. And you are going to be his hands and his mouth and his feet, and the witness of your life is going to be super powerful. That doesn't mean I don't have a place. So we, the apostle, the evangelizer, the preacher, the teacher, the prophet, the servant, the administrator, the singer, the children's minister, the youth minister, the greeter, the money counter, the counsellor, the cleaner, the chair putter outerer, the equipment bringer. We need to experience conversion, that this matters. But even at a deeper level, We have to experience conversion at the level of what it means to live a counterlife to secularism. We need to live lives that are not godless but God-filled. We have to live lives that are not about the individualism. We have to live lives that are counter to that, but rather lives of community and lives of church. We have to live lives that are counter to materialism and consumerism, that lead to selfishness and self-centeredness that says, here I am. And you know, and there's nothing wrong with having stuff, but sometimes stuff leads to self-centeredness, doesn't it? And he and the Lord is meant to be the center of our life. So to do this, Jesus has to color our whole life in, and our prayer life in, our study, our reading, our conversations. What we spend our time with has to be consumed with the presence of Jesus, with a heart that says, I love people so much that I want them to have what I have. Otherwise, we will do what some groups have done and what I've done in my life, is that we will look and we'll read the documents of the church and we'll hear the popes calling out for be bold, be bold. And we will be so well studied and we will be so well set up in our systems how we're going to do it. And we will understand it in our head, but we will be heartless. We will be successful when we begin to cry for the unchurched, for our brothers and sisters who are far from Christ. And because of it, their marriages are a mess. And for people that are lonely and are distant from knowing who God is, and they experience that in their everyday walk. And for teenagers who just are lost. We will have been converted when they matter to us more than we matter to us, because we're living in some sense in a world and we've become secular because we've become materialistic and we've become individualistic. This is about us. This is not actually about our strategy. Because anyone can come up with strategy. I've not told you anything today that you couldn't read in 1,000 books. Or you couldn't visit in 1,000 churches. I've not told you anything you can't find anywhere else. There's nothing in what I've told you that's particularly magic. Nothing. The secret to this is us. It's us. And unless we get that, we'll just have bishops writing nice things about us and saying, I'm excited. And yeah, we'll reach a few. But we won't know him. And that's the bit that makes the power.
That message by Bruce Downs was given to the Catholic Guy Impact Communities. For more information about the Catholic Guy and Impact Ministries, visit thecatholicguy.com or search for the Catholic Guy on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.